Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our news and information hour. It's nice to see you. I'm here, Bud Dickman. Bud?
How you doing?
And Robert Leonard.
Now, I want to ask you about that conversation I just heard you having with Dan about Ronnie Montrose.
Yeah, well, we were playing Bad Motor Scooter by Montrose during our break, and Dan mentioned that Ronnie Montrose, the news now is that he committed suicide.
Yeah, they said it was a gunshot.
Yeah. Did you know that, Bud?
Uh-uh.
So we were talking about, you know, Ronnie Montrose, and he was despondent, he was depressed, he'd had cancer, and apparently Dan mentioned that he felt he and this is a very interesting thing. And again, I'm talking about a guitar player, folks, who was had his own band. He was also, you know, he had Sammy Hagar in his group for a while. I think he played, Ronnie Montrose played with maybe Edgar Winter and a few other bands. Anyway, he felt that he should have been held in much higher regard among the fans than he was. And he was held in high regard among guitar players, but he wasn't as popular as Clapton. He wasn't as popular as Hendrix. He wasn't as popular as Eddie Van Halen. He wasn't as popular, you know. But then, who knows the name Stephen Vai, you know?
Yeah, but Stephen Vai, he's great.
Well, so is Ronnie Montrose. The point that I'm making here is that these are guys that are known and respected by the other guitar players. The fans don't know them because the fans only know the names of the people that get on stage and, you know, and are the, you know, that's why Van Halen is famous. That's why Hendrix is famous. That's why Clapton is famous. They invested, I would dare say, either they did or the people around them invested a lot of time in making them commercially viable and successful guys. Eric Clapton, you know, was that kind of a guy. He had Phil Collins producing his music at one point. You don't do that, man, unless you want to really make a commercial splash. And Montrose didn't ever strike me as the kind of guy that would do that. And that's what you got to do, you know.
Yeah, but you want to sell a lot of records. You don't have to do that.
Oh, yes, you do. See, you may think that all you got to do is make a great record and, oh, my goodness gracious, it's going to be number one. No. Wrong, man. Wrong. There's a whole lot that goes into making a hit record or a hit recording or a big seller. A lot of it is, first of all, a lot of it's just flat out, you know, who is it? What kind of record label is it? And are they getting behind this guy? Is he going out on tour a lot in support of this record, of this album, of this CD? You know, is he getting the marketing that he deserves, the promotion that he deserves? I mean, are they really getting behind the record? I mean, Rod Stewart, I remember I was a music director for a long time. Rod Stewart had some of the worst records I've ever heard. He had some of the worst music. And I'm not saying he was bad, because there was a period where he had some good music. But there was a period there where Rod Stewart just flat sucked. And I don't care what anybody says. He sucked. And guess what? His stuff was being played everywhere, man. You trying to tell me that that guy's music merited all of that play? Well, it was a snowball effect. He was Rod Stewart. He'd been in Faces. Here comes these big songs like Maggie May and ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-boo-boo-boo-boo. And now we got to play Rod Stewart. And he comes out with his crap. Absolute crap, you know.
Like what?
Oh, Hot Legs. And that stuff sucked, man. Don't tell me that was good music. That was absolutely drunken, slobby. It's just crap. But by that point, that guy could do no wrong. There was a period there about 4 or 5 years, Rod Stewart was the biggest damn thing in music. He had a big record company. He was on Atlantic, and he was one of the fair-haired boys on that label, along with Led Zeppelin and a few others. And so they just loved his ass, and they would do anything for him, and they would put all kinds of money into promoting him. And Montrose, and if you're the kind of guy... If you're not a guy like Rod Stewart was, that's throwing television sets out the window and, you know, and tearing it up and drinking, you know, 6 or 7 bottles of that, you know, $150 a bottle freaking cognac. What is that crap?
I don't know. They're like Louis III or something like that now. I don't know.
Well, whatever. If you're just a guy that works hard and plays one hell of a good guitar and breaks his ass and does good records, I mean, that's boring. And there has to be a little bit of this panache and flash that sells it, too. So, you know, and this is the reality, man. The reality is the following thing, that you're going to be in 100 years when they talk about the great era of guitars and guitar players in rock and roll, they won't mention Ronnie Montrose. They won't. They will mention Clapton, and they'll mention Hendrix, and they'll mention the, you know, the guys like the Eddie Van Halen. They won't mention Montrose. They won't mention Steve Vai. They won't mention the cat who played for Ozzy, Dusty Rhodes. They won't mention any of those guys. They will mention the guys that the fans remember. Those are the ones who live in down in popularity in history. You know.
So you're telling me you're not even going to know who the guy was.
There'll be people who know who he is, like some people know who, like, who was that guy in that movie we saw? Remember we saw that movie about Mozart?
Yeah, Amadeus.
Who was the other, Salieri? Did you ever hear of him?
No, I never heard of him. I don't know the guy.
Yeah, and yet he was very popular in his day. And in that movie, this guy Salieri, oh, wow, well, Salieri, what a fantastic, who ever heard of that guy? Nobody. Not now. So, unfortunately, that's the you know, that's the way it goes, man. But you know, one thing about Montrose, at least he knew that, you know, he was good, and other musicians knew he was great, and he was true to his craft. And I don't know, man. Maybe there'll be a different way of quantifying these things in the future. I have no idea. All right,
what's that mean?
Quantify? Well, there'll be a different way of judging, of gauging, of what's the value of these things? Will we change? Are we going to change as time goes on? Are we going to no longer look at just who was the most popular guy? Are we actually going to look and see who was really the best? I don't know. Probably not. I don't think history changes in terms of recording history. It's always, well, like they say, it's the guy that wins. All right, now here is a story that is really fascinating. I remember hearing about this story a number of years ago, and it just, every time I read about this, it just blows me away. A little boy by the name of Eaton Patz, he was 6 years old when he disappeared on May the 25th of 1979 on his way to a bus stop in New York City. Gone. It's been more than 30 years after 6-year-old Eaton Patz disappeared in New York City on his way to the bus stop. Police and federal authorities now are tearing apart a lower Manhattan basement in search of clues as to what happened to the boy who became the face of missing children in America.
I never heard of this.
It was a big story at the time. It resurrected, maybe it was like the 20th anniversary when I read about it back in 1999. Eaton Patz disappeared on May the 25th, 1979, a block from his home in the city's Soho neighborhood, New York. It was the first time he walked to the bus stop by himself. He was six. Authorities said both new and old information led them to a carpenter and a part-time handyman who met Eaton the day before he disappeared and gave the boy a dollar. It was interest in the carpenter that prompted authorities to bring a cadaver dog to a Soho basement where Eaton apparently encountered the 42-year-old carpenter, according to a source with knowledge of the investigation. The dogs picked up the scent of human remains. Late Thursday, authorities set up a grid in the basement and were using jackhammers to rip up the concrete floor. They also took out part of the back wall of the basement, an unoccupied area beneath what was once a restaurant. Wow.
Did they find him?
They don't say yet whether they found him. I don't think so. We're looking for human remains, clothing, or other personal effects of Eaton Patz, according to New York City Department spokesperson Paul Brown. It's a very painstaking process because they're using jackhammers. You're looking for human remains.
Yeah, you don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, you don't want to just go tear an ass into the. You don't know whether you're looking for the remains in the cement or whether you're looking for the remains in the dirt, the earth underneath it, or what. In 2010, Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. Wow. I wonder if that guy's related to Cyrus Vance.
Who's he? Is he the guy in Tom Twist?
Tom Twist?
Yeah.
Who's Tom Twist?
You know, the story about Christmas.
Cyrus Vance, he's probably the son of the grandson of a famous American diplomat. What do you mean, Tom Twist?
What's the story about Christmas?
You guys talking about Tiny Tim?
Yeah, yeah.
What's that got to do with Cyrus Vance?
Ain't that the guy? Oh, no, Scrooge.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
In any event, Tom Twist.
All right, move on from it.
Yeah, just move on, man. We got it wrong. Move on. Don't keep playing it back.
Yeah.
Oh, well, excuse me, Mr. Producer. Excuse me.
Yeah, just let it go.
Yeah, okay, I'll just let it go. Thanks very much for giving me the ins and the outs on how to do this, man. It's so great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, just let go of it, man.
Okay, I'm letting go of it now. You want to watch me let go of it?
Come on, man, move on.
I'm going to move on, bud, as soon as you shut up. All right, so this guy, Cyrus Vance, what?
David.
Move on, will you? What do you keep talking about it for?
I'm moving on. What are you doing?
Well, I keep hearing you talking about this guy, Cyrus Vance, wasn't that the guy in Elmer Scrooge, or what was the guy's name?
No, the guy named Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, Elmer Fudd in Christmas Carol?
Elmer Fudd wasn't in Christmas Carol. Ebenezer Scrooge was.
Wasn't that the guy?
No, this guy's name is Cyrus Vance.
Yeah, in Oliver Copperfield or whatever, I forget.
What's the one with Oliver Twist?
That's Oliver Twist.
Ain't that the Christmas one?
No, it's not. You guys are so stupid, it defies description.
Now, wait a minute, man. I don't...
All right, shut up. Not another word.
No.
Not another word. Let's take a break.
Yeah, I think you need one.
You say one more word, but I'm walking over there and I'm slugging you, okay?
Whatever.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Cyrus Vance.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, you got the whole thing there, huh? What do you got? Welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What do you got?
I got the Cyrus Vance story. Now, Cyrus Vance story...
Is that David's phone?
Yeah.
Hang it up, will you?
Cyrus Vance was the Secretary of the State, okay?
I
got it.
Let me see that.
No, but you take that part.
You guys quit fooling with it and just read it.
Yeah, Cyrus Vance was a Secretary of State under... Jimmy Carter.
Yeah. Hey, bud, hold on for a minute.
Yeah.
Do you know what a microphone is?
Yeah.
Then quit sticking your mouth up to it, man, like you're making love to it.
Shut up! Cyrus Vance was a Secretary of Estate. And then says something here about a beanstalk. That's the guy who threw the seeds out in the back for the beanstalk.
Yeah, that's it, man. Because I knew that had something to do with...
What do you mean a beanstalk?
I'm just kidding.
I'm going to kick somebody's... Ah! Cyrus Vance threw some beans out the back. He was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter. There, are you done with your Oliver Twist or Tiny Twist? Whatever the hell it was.
Tiny Twist.
Yeah, Tiny Twist. Charles Dickens would love that one, man, if he was still around. Hey, Chuck. I bet you that's what you guys would call him. Hey, Chuck, how about you combine Christmas Carol and Oliver Twist and you get Tiny Twist? What do you think?
That's pornographic.
Pornographic? Boy, your mind, man. I'd hate to, anyway. All right, so where were we? We were talking about this poor child that went missing in 1979, Cyrus Vance, and you guys got me sidetracked. In 2010, Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr., he's the son of Cyrus Vance, the former Secretary of State and former Assistant Secretary of the Army. He's the son of that man. He is now the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., said his office decided to take another look at the decades-old mystery. FBI leads were then culled from that case file. This was in 2010. The investigation, which has often been described as a milestone case that helped draw the plight of missing children into the national consciousness, garnered headlines as authorities splashed the child's image on the sides of milk cartons in the hopes of gathering more information. It's thought to be the first time that that step was taken for a missing child. Eaton was officially declared dead in 2001 as part of a civil lawsuit filed by his family against a drifter, Jose Antonio Ramos, a convicted child molester acquainted with Eaton's babysitter. A judge found Ramos responsible for the death and ordered him to pay the family $2 million. I guess he must have paid that up. What does it say here? A drifter?
Yeah, but he had that just kicking around in a bank account.
Yeah. No, he never paid it. Though Ramos has been considered a key focus of the probe for years, he's never been charged in the case. He's now currently serving a 20-year sentence in Pennsylvania for molesting another boy and is set to be released later this year. A source said investigators now also want to expand the pool of possible suspects beyond Ramos. The carpenter, now 75, is not in custody, though authorities say they know where he is and are currently in contact with him. CNN is not naming the man because he's not been charged with a crime. Now, before I keep going...
Where's this guy, this drifter guy?
He's in prison. Now, it's very interesting. I think the whole thing around civil cases is fast when they say, you know, a civil case was filed finding you responsible for the person's death, therefore you have to pay this money. I think that's... the closest thing to double jeopardy that I've ever heard of in my life. I know that it isn't technically because it's not a criminal case. It's a civil case, which means you're not going to go to jail, but you can be found responsible. They don't call you guilty. They say you're responsible for the death and you have to pay damages. This happened to O.J. Simpson. It's happened to a great many people. And this guy, this Ramos guy, was found by a judge to be responsible for the death of this kid. Now, they're expanding it beyond him. I wonder what that says about that civil case.
If they're going to find another guy guilty, guess he didn't do it.
Or maybe more than one person. I don't know. Dozens of police and federal agents gathered outside the building on Manhattan's Prince Street on Thursday and are expected to continue their search over the next 5 days. FBI Special Agent Peter Donald said the Bureau's evidence recovery team is at the scene. Here is FBI Special Agent Tim Flannelly speaking. He said, quote, "We are cautiously optimistic that the search will be helpful. Forensic evidence uncovered at the scene will be analyzed at the FBI laboratory in Quantico, Virginia. It's not clear whether authorities searched the basement in 1979, though a source said it figured into the investigation."
What's that mean?
I don't know what it means.
They didn't search it?
It says it's not clear whether authorities searched the basement. You know, I always love this. I got to tell you, one of the things I'm learning is that police work today is far more meticulous, or maybe it's just demanding more things than it demanded of cops back in the old days. Because when I say back in the old days, because don't you think cops would keep notes? Or like, did you search the basement? Yes, we did. How do we? Well, I have it in my notes. You know, that day we went down. At least I've got notes on what we did. But they don't, you know, they throw stuff out.
Yeah, they got to throw stuff out, man. They can't keep everything, you know.
But I mean, the notes on a case that's still open? Come on. I mean, yeah, I know they throw stuff out, but they haven't found this kid. If ever there was a case where you're not going to throw stuff out. All right. So anyway, it's not clear whether authorities searched the basement in 79. Authorities have reason to think the new search could lead to the discovery of the boy's remains at that location, though they remain wary after past leads in the case failed to pan out, according to two familiar sources with the probe. Interesting. I hope they find something, said resident Sean Sweeney, who says he's lived in the neighborhood since 1976.
Boy, that guy's probably seen a lot, Son of Sam and everything.
Well, I don't know. Son of Sam was in Brooklyn, wasn't it?
What's the difference?
The difference is one place is Brooklyn. This is another part. What do you mean, what's the difference? Soho, a lower Manhattan neighborhood now known for its boutique shops, art galleries, and loft apartments, at the time was considered a grittier locale where abandoned storefronts dotted the city streets. Sweeney said he remembers the initial investigation into Eaton's disappearance when police first knocked on his door in search of clues. "That's odd, isn't it?" he said, referring to the fact that 33 years later, police are again in his neighborhood searching for the boy. So this guy that was is being quoted. On the day of his disappearance, Eaton's mother, Julie Patz, learned after her son failed to return home from school that he hadn't been in classes that day. She called the school, then called the homes of all of his friends. When she found no one who had seen her son, she called police and filed a missing person report. By evening, more than 100 police officers and searchers had gathered with bloodhounds. The search continued for weeks, but no clues to Eaton's whereabouts were found.
Yeah, but see, why'd they get the cops involved that soon?
Why'd they get the cops in? Because the kid was missing.
Yeah, but he might have just decided to take, you know...
Yeah, maybe he decided just to take a vacation.
Are you guys stupid or something?
That's what they say about missing persons.
If they're adults, yeah. He might have decided to take a vacation. He's a six-year-old kid, man.
Yeah, all they talk about, you know, you don't know if they took off maybe just to clear their head.
Yeah, that's right. A six-year-old kid takes off to get his head cleared out. Because, you know, it's been a lot of pressure lately. No, man. Not a six-year-old kid. Adults, yes. Adults, you say, well, maybe they took off. Maybe she left you, man. Sorry, Charlie. Who knows? But not a little baby. We'll be right back. The world famous. Boy, I can't wait for what you guys are going to ask me in the next 30 minutes.
Well, it's just stuff we're interested in.
Yeah, huh? How about finishing school? That'd be something, bud. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry Show.
Do you think I gotta do that?
Yeah, you look like a midget.
I don't look like a midget, but I think we're looking at our video cast here. I think I gotta sit up higher in the chair or something. I don't know.
Yeah, if you do that, though, man, they're gonna be able to see the like the beautiful ocean.
Well, that's true, too. But I do look like, I don't know, I look too close or something. Anyway, welcome back to the program, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're looking at our video cast. You can watch us on video at philhendryshow.com with the backstage pass. You can see us perform our show. It's just something else. So check us out at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and find out, as we like to say, what the only real radio show left on Earth not only sounds like, but looks like. Okay. Now, I've got just the tail end of the story, because, and I apologize that I haven't finished this story, but I've been interrupted.
Yeah, well, I just had some questions.
Great. You can have questions. Just quit butting in. On the day of his disappearance, well, I told you, his mother called the police. Now, we're talking about this Eaton Patz. This young boy has been missing since 1979. The police are now investigating and are tearing apart a basement in the area that the child went missing. This is Soho, and they've got jackhammers in this basement. It is a basement that is either owned or was rented by a carpenter, a 75-year-old carpenter, a man who is not in custody, but is in touch with authorities, and they're in touch with him, so they know where he is, and they're looking into this basement. There's an evidence recovery team at the scene, and one of the FBI agents is quoted as saying, "We are cautiously optimistic." So that's interesting. However, they have been in the past disappointed by other tips. So let me move on to the tail end of the story. By evening, and this is evening of the day this child went missing, more than 100 police officers and searchers had gathered with bloodhounds. The search continued for weeks. No clues to Eaton's whereabouts were ever found. The boy's disappearance was thought to raise awareness of child abductions and led to new ways to search for missing children. President Reagan named May 25th, the day Eaton went missing, National Missing Children's Day. All right, there you go.
That's when they put him on a milk carton, huh?
He was the first child to be put on a milk carton, yeah. Put the picture on a milk carton. Eaton Patz. So that's, you know, and I don't know whether they're going to find out. Well, we'll see, man. The guy's optimistic. But, you know, like we were saying during the break, and I'll tell you, I love Investigation Discovery. I think it's the greatest channel in the history of the world, man. I'm telling you. Now, you know, it isn't that I've got a macabre a curiosity about death and mayhem and crime, but I am interested. Let's face it. What bedevils society more than anything? Well, it's criminal activity. You know, it isn't the economy is up, the economy's down, and I don't know. Should we go to war? Should we not? And, you know, should we salute the flag? Should we? But what is the thing that really hassles us more than anything else? Criminals. You know, you get rid of crime, that like 90% of our problems would dry up. But all we'd have to do is just worry about this other stuff, you know, whether or not we're being productive as a country, society, economy, blah, 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 all that other good stuff. But we got to deal with some jackass who's stealing our car or killing our kids or something. So it behooves us to learn more about it. You know, how do you, first of all, what causes it? But that's going to take a long time. But how about how to solve some of these crimes? And that's why I love watching, because they have so many different shows.
Yeah, they got that, like that forensic one.
Oh, the forensic thing is incredible, man. I mean, they are learning. You got to understand, folks, DNA. Forget about DNA. Those pea brains that did that whole Casey Anthony trial, I'll never, that jury, jeez. I get it about, you know, Jeff Ashton and the other attorney, I forget the woman's name, You know, I think, and in retrospect, they butchered that. Just butchered it.
Are you kidding me? They did a good job. The jury was dumb.
No, well, look, the jury was whatever the jury was. And all that stuff, you know, oh, well, where's the DNA? Well, look at, man, you'll excuse us, but they were actually finding people guilty in days when there was no DNA evidence. So what are you talking about? So, I think the attorneys were, when I think back on that case and I think more and more about it, I think those two attorneys were lousy. Lousy.
Hey, wait a minute. How do you say that, man? Everybody knows it was good.
Yeah, people were writing songs about it and everything.
What do you mean writing songs about him?
They had that one song by that lady, Linda.
Is that her name, Linda? Well, good. They can write songs they want, all they want. But the two of them laid that case out real jackball, man. They needed to get real. They had to get real specific with evidence and not talk about these highfalutin notions of, well, the little baby is going to, she's talking now, and she may tell people that mommy is out dancing, and I better kill her. And this is a whole bunch of gobbledygook. But here's what I'm trying to say. They didn't have any DNA, man. They have, these days, they not only have DNA, they got bugs, man. Bugs.
What do you mean, bugs?
They look and see what kind of insect they found at the crime scene. So they got a dead body, and they have a certain insect with the dead body. They can tell you when the body was there, how long the body's been dead, from what season, you know.
I thought they had a doctor come along and take the temperature rectally.
Yeah.
Take the temperature rectally.
Yeah, the dead body. That way they know when it croaked.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. What if it's been dead, say, 3 years?
Well,
can they do it still?
No. No, they can't, man.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, no. 3 years, the dead corpse, it's probably just bones. You're not going to be able to take its temperature rectally.
Yeah.
Shut up, man.
All right, bud. You know, you think it's funny?
No, but I mean,
they're not going to be able to take its temperature rectally, okay? So what they have to do to find out the time of death is they have to look at the environment that it's in, find out what kind of, literally, insects. When do certain insects lay their eggs? When do certain insects, and what time of year would that insect, as opposed to that one, be around? Plus, the kind of trees, the kind of leaves, the kind of weeds. This is all now a part of crime scene analysis. So they find just a bunch of bones, okay? They try to find what may be lying underneath it. What is the state of this environment now as opposed to when maybe the body was laid there? Take its temperature rectally.
Well, I mean, I didn't know. You know, I know you can't do it with a skeleton.
Hey, give the man a cigar. You can't do it with a skeleton. All right, let's move on to other news.
You're just thinking about taking a temperature rectally because he turns you on.
Shut up. Hey. Judge allows University of Colorado crackdown on pot rally. Huh? Well, here's a 420 story, man. A judge upheld on Thursday the right of the University of Colorado to restrict outside visitors to its flagship campus for a day in a move school officials hope will squelch a huge marijuana smoke-in that has become an annual tradition. The Boulder campus, located in one of the most liberal cities in Colorado, has warned it would no longer tolerate the annual gathering of pot smokers planned for Friday, which drew an estimated 10,000 people last year. The event is held on April the 20th, or
420.
Right. A date corresponding with a numerical code widely known within the cannabis subculture as a symbol for all things marijuana. Whatever.
Ain't it, though?
I don't know. I heard that it's like the time on the clock, you know, that was the first. I'll tell you what I heard. I heard that 420 was the day some guys started smoking weed. They were Grateful Dead fans, and they smoked dope after school at 420. And I think they were going to a Dead concert. Okay?
That sounds stupid.
Of course it sounds stupid, but that's the most verifiably substantial. That's the one story that everybody has pointed to as being close to actually the real case. It was started by some Dead fans smoking dope at 4:20 in the afternoon. They might have been on their way to a Dead concert. I don't know. All right, so where were we? Yes, so this is a numerical code, yada, 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 yada. The university's move comes as federal authorities are cracking down on some medical pot dispensaries in Colorado and several mostly Western states. Yeah, like
California.
A total of 16 states and the District of Columbia allow medical marijuana despite opposition from the federal government. Boulder District Judge Andrew McDonald said at a hearing that the school's plan to bar visitors may be dumb or great, but that he would not comment on its wisdom. The issue is whether the university has the authority to put reasonable restrictions on the use of their facilities, McDonald said, in ruling that the college could take that action. Boulder Chancellor Phil DiStefano testified that past efforts to halt the rally have failed, including turning on lawn sprinklers and a program that offered to pay students to identify anyone caught in photographs smoking marijuana at the event. Yeah, right. You know?
Yeah, I'm sure they got people narc everybody out. Ain't going to happen.
Speaking of narking people out, what were you saying, Bud, about D.A.R.E.?
Yeah, well, I came up in a D.A.R.E. program. They told you to narc your folks out.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too.
No kidding. No? So did you?
Yeah.
No, you didn't. All right, so anyway, he also said the decade-old gathering disrupts teaching and research on the heart of the campus. Visitors who enter the campus without permission on Friday could face trespassing charges and a fine of $750, according to school officials. No one, including students, will be allowed on the field where the raucous smoke-filled gathering has previously been held. What field is that, man?
Probably like an athletic field.
Attorney Robert Corey, who represents medical marijuana businesses in Colorado, had filed a complaint seeking an injunction that would block the university from restricting access. The legal papers he filed said the gathering at the university conveyed an anti-prohibition message. If free speech isn't allowed on a college campus, where is it safe? Corey told Reuters. The Colorado chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union has also objected to the university's action. Boulder District Attorney Stanley Garnett, who recently gained acclaim among pot activists for voicing objection to a federal crackdown on Colorado medical cannabis dispensaries, told Reuters earlier this month his office was involved in efforts to control the University of Colorado rally. Well, first of all, you can talk about it being speech, but part of that speech is the breaking of a law. So that becomes civil disobedience, and so cops arrest. So either way, your ass is up for grabs.
Well, they're going to come in and bust people?
Yeah, they're telling you you can't go on the field. They're not letting anybody on the campus.
So they're serious?
Yeah, they're serious. What do you think, they're kidding? They're telling people, if you show up, we're going to have you arrested. And I'll bet you, and I'll tell you right now, man, if anybody starts smoking weed, damn sure they'll have them arrested. There you go, man. The most liberal city in America, but not quite. All right, world-famous Phil Hendry. She'll be right back here, 877-876-PHIL. It is our News and Information Hour. Don't forget to head on over to our website after the show for a show log. Tells you what all happened on the show. And get a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We were just talking about this whole idea of federal enforcement of federal marijuana laws. And there's people that I know who smoke weed, who have medical marijuana licenses, and who are in favor of keeping the dispensaries open in whatever state. I'm in favor of keeping the dispensaries open, but I understand. And then they say this. They go, what's Obama doing? And Obama, let me explain what Obama's doing, okay? Obama can't ignore a state governor saying, hey, excuse me, Mr. President, we got a federal law being broken here and we want some enforcement. He can't say, stick it up your you-know-what, man, I'm not interested because I'm in favor of decriminalizing weed. That's not what the President of the United States and the Attorney General of the United States are supposed to do. That's the executive branch of the government. That's the law enforcement branch of the government. I don't give a damn if a president, and believe me, you have to be this way if you're president. You may like this and you may like that. There may be a million things that you want and you don't want. But if a governor of a state says, well, so, you know, when Obama became president, I remember him saying, and Holder said the same thing, you know, we're going to back off of the federal interdiction of these laws. We've got other things we want to do. And so everybody, you know, was all excited about that. And people who were in favor of legalizing marijuana were all excited. As I was. But the minute somebody comes to you, and you know that there's guys getting up in Congress and elsewhere, Mr. President, in my state, why this and that, what the hell are you doing, man? Sitting on your dead ass? Let's go, baby. Let's get some people around. You know, you got to call out the freaking forces, and you got to go in there, and you got to do what you got to do. You know, I wish it wasn't that way, but hey, you know, this is America. We are talking about marijuana, at which nobody, you know, we're the most uneducated country probably in the world when it comes to pot. Now, the Attorney General in California...
She's black, too.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, you'd think she'd be more liberal.
Why, bud? Because she's black? You ever heard of Condoleezza Rice?
Yeah.
Well, Condoleezza Rice, she was raised by white people.
What's that? What are you talking about, man?
I'm just saying, don't you think if she's a black attorney general, she'd be a liberal?
No.
Why, bud? I mean, people come from all walks of life. The attorney general for the state of California is Kamala Harris. I don't really know, but I'm going to tell you this much. Somebody in California said to the federals, and it probably was a representative or something.
Yeah, probably some guy in Congress.
Said to the federals, hey, we got all these dispensaries in California. You guys are standing around with your thumb up your rear end. Let's go, man. Let's hit it.
Can't say no to that, huh?
You ain't going to say no to that. What are you, the attorney general? And you say no? No, you know, I'm not really interested. Oh, you're not, huh? Well, guess what? How would you like us to, you know, bring articles of impeachment against your ass or whoever we get rid of attorney generals? Would you like that? If you're not going to do your job. So I, no doubt somebody put the pressure on. They put the heat on. Now, Kamala Harris used to be the San Francisco DA. So I don't know. All signs point to the fact that she's a liberal, but she's enforcing, assisting in enforcing the federal law here in California. So they've swept in, they busted down on Oaksterdam, which is...
What's Oaksterdam anyway?
Yeah, is that up in Oakland?
It's in Oakland. And it's a university, or it's at least an institution of learning. You can actually get degrees in something.
Like get a degree in smoking weed.
But I'd love to get a degree like that.
I'm going to get my doctorate in bud.
What a retard, man.
I got it out.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it out eventually. I'm going to get my doctorate in smoking bud. Anyway.
You know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean. Sure, bud. All right.
And for another man, your name is Bud. I bet you they named you after what it was they were smoking before they conceived you.
Oh, that's real funny.
All right, take it easy. So that's the name of that game, man. What the hell do you want me to tell you? That's how it works, all right? So quit crying about it. Talking about Obama stabbing you in the back and Obama's this and Obama's that. Obama is the president of the United States. He's got to uphold the law. That's number one. Number two... and I've said this before about Obama. He's far more the pragmatist than people really want to recognize. Some of these people make me laugh until I want to throw up. They're talking about how Obama, well, you know, he was supported by progressives. How come he's not doing this about the Patriot and this and that? You talk about misreading a guy. I've never seen a president more misread by people in my life. You know?
Yeah, he even thinks the Kardashians are sluts.
The who?
You talking about the Kardashians?
Yeah.
Kardashians. He thinks they're sluts.
Yeah. He don't want his kids watching it or nothing.
That's what he was saying. They don't want no kids watching it.
Hey, by the way, speaking of the Kardashians, Kim Kardashian, am I right? Did I read that she wants to run for mayor of Glendale?
Yeah, she does.
Why?
It said on a calendar there was a lot of Armenian there.
Yeah, there's a lot of Armenians in Glendale and everything.
Armenians in Glendale, huh?
Yeah, you used to live up there, didn't you?
I lived in Pasadena. I'll tell you where I lived in Pasadena. There was a lot of Armenians. There's probably a lot of Armenians in that part of Pasadena, Glendale, up in the foothills.
Yeah, probably Armenians like the mountainous regions on account of the billy goats, or that they used to have.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
The billy goats they used to have?
Don't Armenians like mountainous areas?
Not that I know of. Armenians like mountainous areas.
You just said they live in a foothill.
They live in the foothills up there, man. It's not because they like mountainous areas. That's where they happen to... Maybe that's where the real estate prices were good. Do they like mountainous areas?
Didn't they have billy goats on account of what you were saying?
No! What I said to you guys about Armenians was the following. In World War One, the Turks, who were already with their asses in their hands, they were done. The Turkish Ottoman Empire was in big, big trouble. They wanted to consolidate their lands, their little empire. They wanted also to effect some changes militarily, and it all came down to the Armenians having to be moved, and it was a inhumane and genocidal forced migration of hundreds of thousands of people, and it killed millions. What that's got to do with billy goats?
Yeah, you said they took goats.
Whatever, they might have taken goats, but it's a serious topic.
God.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry and Dan Northcraft, and join us online at philhendryshow.com for our marvelous, marvelous video casts, all of our, all of our fantastic archives. We got it all there, baby. You just got to check it out there at philhendryshow.com. And, of course, our merchandise shop as well, where you can pick up your hoodies and your keychains and like that, okay? The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Let that be a lesson
to
you.
Phil Hendry.